You are listening to the Prepared Mindset Podcast. Welcome in, everybody. I'm your host, Austin. Welcome back. If you guys are a returning listener, welcome in. If this is your very first time checking us out, happy to have you guys on board for another episode, another discussion as 2025 rolls on. And I mean, it's really on a roll. I'm at the time of this recording, so I'm doing this a little bit early because I gotta get the schedule all organized. I'm gonna be traveling for work and stuff, and we kind of, you know, stuff's jumbled at times here. So do what we can to make sure that we bring content to you guys at our regular programmed date and time. But looking outside, it is snowing right now. I think it's probably only the set. Like, I mean, here's the difference. Like, if you guys are listening from someplace warm, you're like, anytime it snows, you say it's snowing. Here in Michigan, or I would say most of the Midwest, to be honest with you guys, it's not snowing unless there's like over an inch of accumulation. And a lot of times, and that means different things, you know, like, oh, it'll just, you know, dust off, or it'll melt because the next day is going to be warm enough that it's not going to stick or whatever. We're supposed to get like 1 to 3 inches of actual accumulation here. So I can actually say it is snowing. I'll probably have to shovel at least a little bit, you know, tomorrow. It's just the way it goes, you know. But we're into 2025. We've had a couple discussions this year already, specifically around the terrorist attack that was carried out in New Orleans on New Year's Eve. The details of that are, I don't want to say they're still emerging, but I feel like with this stuff, it is just always evolving and changing, right? So we had one set of details when we found out on Wednesday morning, right, on New Year's Day. We had another set of details. It seemed like lunchtime. About lunchtime is when we got another set of details. And then as the days roll on, we get more and more, right? So we had our first episode was the sit rep. We get into that. I was able to connect with a good friend of the podcast, Mr. Joe Fasinella. You guys know him on Instagram. It's Gray Fighter. Go check out that episode because it's very insightful on a lot of the recent history and modern history of terrorism in the last decade across the world as it relates to the West. So not necessarily, we don't get into like a ton of things involving, like, an example would be terrorist training. We do mention it, but we don't, you know, deep dive on that. But we do talk a lot about terrorism and how, you know, there were attacks in Paris in 2015, the Germany Christmas market attack, the attacks here in the United States on New Year's Eve, both New Orleans and Las Vegas, Vegas being, of course, the Cybertruck bombing attempt at Trump Tower, both individuals, former service members here of the United States Army. So we get into that stuff. Me and Joe sit down, we have a discussion on it, and there's a lot to take away there. You know, Joe's he's a wealth of knowledge if you want to reach out to him about it and you have some specific questions. I know with some of the discussions going on right now out on social media with Sarah Adams and some other people who are, I don't want to say finally coming forward, but people that are coming forward and making this known. Hey, we need to talk about this. This is concerning. This is a problem. More people have this at the forefront of their minds. They want to know about it. They want to know what the heck is going on and should they be, planning, should they be making accommodations? Should they be prepared? The answer is always yes. You should be relatively prepared for a number of contingencies, right? Which can, you know, up to and including, yes, an executed terrorist attack on American soil, which may be near your home. That's in 2025, unfortunately, that's just the reality of it. And we get into that. We talk about it. So what I want to do this week is I'm going to talk about, so it's going to be a follow-on discussion of sorts where I'm going to carry out, or I guess walk through is the better. I don't know why I said carry out. That doesn't make any sense. Walk through my thoughts on what you can do as a prepared individual, my opinions on some things around that subject, that idea, that concept of, yes, a terrorist attack could be potentially possible anywhere. You know, I'm gonna share some thoughts on how we got to this point. So it will be an extension of our last two discussions because I think there's a lot to get into, guys. So if you listen to the last two and said, hey, there's a whole bunch, that I wish he would have, you know, touched on. Yeah. you know, the sit rep, I wanted to focus on one specific incident, and last week was for Joe. Not for him so much as just, I want to hear him speak. You guys wanted to hear him speak. So, this week, we're going to get into my thoughts. We're going to get into my opinions on everything that's been going on. We'll reference some of the recent events in the last, in the last, I don't know, couple of years here, the impacts of which we're still dealing with, and are in the back of our minds constantly, right? You don't want to, you know, think about this stuff constantly. So before I do that, you guys, this is a sponsored podcast, so we are going to jump into our ad space. We have some partners that we work with that are just absolutely outstanding companies. They make some outstanding products. I want to make sure that we take the time and the opportunity to share them with all of you, talk about what they do, why they're amazing, and why we love, you know, partnering with them. So with that, I want to say thank you first to our friends at Custom Night Vision. You guys, customnightvision.com, that is their website. And if you are looking to get into a night vision device, or you're planning on getting into it later on in 2025, maybe that's your New Year's resolution, you want night vision. It's a great resolution. I usually hate New Year's resolutions, but that would be an awesome one. Head over to the website. There's a chat function built into the lower right-hand corner of the site. So you can actually reach out to Kevin or Ben or Trevor, and you can ask away. You can address the questions and the concerns that you have around picking out a night vision device, around, you know, dual tube. What's going to happen? What the impacts behind your experience might be, depending on what choice that you make. So again, it's customnightvision.com. When you get to the homepage there, there's two buttons. One is to build a monocular. That's a single tube device, like a PBS-14 or a Tonto, or, you know, some of the, there's some new ones coming out. SHOT Show is only a couple weeks away. I'm sure we'll have more single tube devices hitting the market. You can also build a binocular device, which is bi, so therefore two tubes, right? Binos, commonly referred to. So depending on what you're looking for and what you want, you can click that button. You can pick the housing that you like. So maybe something from AB Night Vision, because you want to drop it on a cinder block and watch and see what happens. And those things are built like tanks. Maybe you want something that's really loaded with features for really high-end performance. Maybe you want to get something like the MH1 from our friends at Low Light Innovations. That's what I'm running right now. It's outstanding. You can pick your optics, you can pick your tubes. So whether you need white phosphor, green phosphor, L3, Elbit, Photonis, they have it all. They have it in stock, you guys. Head on over to customnightvision.com and check it all out for yourself. And if you're already looking into getting night vision, and maybe you want to make a purchase to set yourself up for success, they also carry helmets, they carry lasers, they carry lights, all kinds of good stuff. Head over to the site one more time here, customnightvision.com, and check it out. Also want to say a big thank you to our friends over at American Defense Manufacturing. Their website is admfg.com, American Defense Manufacturing. It's all just summed up there, admfg.com. And fantastic company, you guys. We are actually, at the time of this recording, we're getting ready to release the first video tomorrow, actually, of our two-part Build a GPR series that we're doing specifically around a 13.9 Mod 2 upper that the folks at ADM sent over to us. Great upper. Comes with the Radian Raptor charging handle, their ADM bolt carrier, which is just outstanding, made with very premium materials for durability and excellent performance. Comes with a 13.9 Criterion core barrel for accuracy, obviously, and then a pin and welded Surefire War Comp so I can run my RC2 on it with their M-Lock handguard. You guys, head on over to admfg.com. You can check it out for yourself. Pick one up, maybe even if you're looking to build out a rifle. Maybe that's something you want to get for yourself, or you're going to build a setup so that you can be a little bit more capable. You can reach some greater distances in 2025. And moving right along, I want to say thank you to Orion Training Group for their partnership and support. You guys, the website is oriontraininggroup.com. Great company with a fantastic cadre of passionate and knowledgeable educators. So John, Josh, and I have all had several opportunities to take classes of varying degrees and sizes and lengths from the guys at Orion. So got to connect with them originally 2 years ago at the HTA event. We got to take small unit tactics. We got to take four-man CQB. They were here in Michigan last year, 2024, in May, for a three-day 4-man structure clearance course, which the three of us took together. And then they're coming back to Michigan this year. It's awesome. They're going to do a whole Midwest tour of Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana. And, you know, stay tuned to the website. Again, OrionTrainingGroup.com. They're going to have that schedule out for you guys. You can go check it out now. I encourage you to see all the classes and curriculum they have available, everything from small unit tactics to radios to structure clearance and a heck of a lot more. And finally here, thank you to the team at 100 Concepts, you guys, 100concepts.com. The motto, you guys know it, it's do good, be dangerous, live free. Head on over to 100concepts.com and check out all the good stuff they have going on over there. They're constantly adding, I think I just got an email today, and that's, so it's the time of this recording, that the AEMS, and I think it's the SCRS, two different hollow sun optics that are, you know, enclosed emitters and very popular. Both of those have been added to their very popular hex cap lineup. These guys are always developing, they're always innovating, they're always working on something new to make sure that you guys are as well covered and well prepared as possible when you're out there in the field, whether it's pack scrim, helmet scrim, it's their hex caps, whatever you got going on, you guys, 100concepts.com. That's the website. Head on over, check it out for yourself, pick yourself up something nice today. So thank you to all of our partners. Appreciate their support tremendously. It is awesome being able to work with companies that are just passionate about what they do, and they bring great products and great services and things into the market for all of you guys every day. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to shut off my freaking phone here because this is getting stupid how loud this is being. All right. So this week, like I said, is a follow-up discussion to everything that I talked about in our last two episodes. So the sit rep, and then obviously the discussion, the interview with Joe Fasanella. To give you guys the cliff notes, we are talking about terrorism at large, what it means for us as prepared Americans. So being our own first responders, being resourceful, being well prepared, and being capable. So what happened in New Orleans is pretty much the perfect example of one of these attacks being carried out on a soft target. What's a soft target? Okay, if you guys haven't heard this before, you know, if you have, I'm sorry, but so if you haven't, it is a target where the inhabitants, the people that are there, right, they can't fight back. So think of places like schools, malls, movie theaters, bars, whatever, where it's illegal by law to carry a firearm. Now, could you encounter armed resistance? Like maybe there's a cop in there or something. Yes, technically, but it's a low probability. It's not like you're walking into a gun range or you're something like that where everyone's armed, right? So that would be the very definition of a hard target, conversely. So these are soft targets. Schools, obviously full of children that are, in a lot of instances, not fighting age. That's why you see these mass shooter incidences carried out by these cowards at fucking schools, right? So when we talk about this, soft targets, it's always the way it goes. The Christmas market in Germany, like there's Europe is in a lot of ways the perfect example of what we could become under, in my opinion, extended liberal leadership, where it's very, very difficult to own any kind of weapon for self-defense. I know there's countries in Europe where the police officers don't even carry firearms. Like in London, your standard beat cop does not have a firearm. They can get them, but it's not a standard. It's not a foregone conclusion like it is here in the United States, where all of our police officers carry pistols. And then if they are in a patrol car, typically they have access to a shotgun or a rifle. So if you look at Europe, that's almost like a glimpse into the future of how helpless their populace and to some degree, right, their law enforcement can be. Now, militarily speaking, different conversation entirely, but we're talking about civilians. So this attack in New Orleans was carried out on a soft target, people out having a good time. And here's the thing, if you're out drinking, you know, you probably shouldn't have a gun on you anyways, just because I know a lot of people that they can't control their drinking. They have a good time, then they want to have more, and they want to have one more. And if you are in a impaired state of mind and function, you shouldn't have access immediately to a firearm. You really shouldn't. Things like bar fights happen, poor decision making, you leave your gun on the counter in the bathroom, God forbid, or something. Yeah, I mean, people do this shit while they're not under the influence. So, you know, I think it stands to reason why there's some legal I guess, guardrails behind that. But getting back to the point here, people are out having a good time. No one's thinking about this. And this guy drives a truck through there, runs people over, so uses the vehicle as a weapon once. Gets out of the vehicle, starts opening fire, okay? Starts discharging his firearm, starts shooting at people, and taking, you know, creating casualties, right? He is, as soon as he drives through everything, there's a video that you can find online. I believe Dan Crenshaw and a couple other notable individuals on platforms like Instagram shared the traffic cam footage, or maybe it was an ATM cam footage, but it leaked, it got out, and officers were very quick to respond. They were able to luckily manage the casualties to a lower number than what it would have been if they were not near. Now, I don't want to say an acceptable number because that's a total fucking lie. So I believe it's somewhere around 12 or 15 dead at the time. There was many, many wounded and injured. The follow-on says that didn't happen, and that's why I said he used the vehicle as a weapon one time, was because the vehicle, I believe I read this right, was loaded with explosives or explosive materials. So technically that Ford F-150 he was driving was a V-bed, so a vehicle-borne IED. Improvised explosive device. If you don't know the vernacular by now, we only heard about it for 25 years during the War on Terror, but I digress. So this is a template that's being carried out. It's being pushed out there by radical extremists, terrorist groups, organizations, right, that are encouraging people, sympathizers of theirs, that want to become affiliated with their organization online and larger, right, that this is the way that this is supposed to happen. This is how you're supposed to carry out this attack. So knowing this, there's certain things that we can do. Now, in a lot of places, you guys have probably seen festivals, gatherings, carnivals, even to an extent in downtown areas and things like that, extremely urban areas, you'll have, I guess, like alleyways, for lack of a better phrase, that are lined with shops on both sides that are designed specifically to have only foot traffic come through there. It's not a street, right? And you don't want vehicles going down it, so they put bollards up. So bollards are those, if you didn't know, they're those really, really, girthy cement pillars that just stick straight up out of the ground. Sometimes they have that janky plastic coating or casing around them that usually cracks and breaks with age. But what those are designed for is to impede any kind of motor vehicle from driving down that street for safety reasons, up to and including attempted terrorist attacks, right? So that's what a bollard is. So in a lot of these instances where they have these festivals and gatherings and things, you will have bollards, you'll have temporary barricades and things put up for festivals, things like the ball drop in Times Square and things like that. And there's been several plots, you know, Joe mentioned them, that have been foiled, but they're very conscious there in New York because of the size of the event, and obviously that New York is such a target because of its recognition across the globe. So knowing this, we still had this attack in New Orleans. The police chief seems by all means to be completely just out of touch with what's going on. They didn't have any kind of barricades. So what can we do as prepared civilians, stopping at this point in the discussion? What can we have done here to have made this better for ourselves or to avoid some kind of situation like this? So first off would have been, I mean, A, if you knew days in advance what was going on, I mean, technically you could be that Karen that picks up the phone and goes, hey, why don't we have any kind of barricades or anything to help protect this area? It's going to be blocked off for the celebration. And I get Bourbon Street is Bourbon Street, and I don't know if they just don't do that there. I would have to defer to people that live in the area, right? But if it's your town, and like in the city that I live in, we do social districts over the summer every 2 weeks. They block off traffic coming from both directions, right? So one end is blocked off with a giant trailer that kind of opens up like clamshell style, and it's a stage. So they have bands, they have music, and all kinds of stuff going on, right? So one end is already blocked off. The other end, they have those really janky construction signs that you basically use to block off traffic, but at least there's something there. And that's how they close the road, So if I were to go attend one of these social districts, right, and social district meaning you can carry around open alcohol containers from one place to the next, and they're always having a good time, and there's food trucks, and there's shit for, you know, camp families and kids to do, right? If I were to attend that and nothing was blocked off, I would have, you know, except for maybe those crappy wood and metal, that's not even a barricade, it's just a construction sign. I'd actually have some questions about that. I wouldn't feel ultra good about standing around in the middle of the street. Now, having a trailer that's a stage that has, you know, hundreds of pounds of equipment on it and people and things like that, like, I feel a little bit better having that there because you're probably not driving through a semi-trailer, regardless of what kind of truck or vehicle you're operating. So looking at that, you can make that assessment. You can make the decision yourself right off the bat just by having a slightly higher than normal perception of what's going on around you. What do I see? What is my, if you will, area of operation look like? More often than not, we as humans try to find a way to explain things away in our mind. Like, oh, what are those loud pops and bangs I'm hearing? Couldn't be gunshots. It's probably a car backfiring or party poppers or somebody's probably setting off fireworks. No, those are gunshots. And we discussed this, you guys, years and years and years ago. We had a gentleman named Yusuf Badu on the podcast. He's with the company Emergence is the name of it. And he was with the Hunter Killer program, I think is what it was called. I'd have to go back and look. He was a Marine. And he was in a program that was literally designed around this kind of stuff with like early threat detection. And it wasn't the Hunter Killer. It was Hunter something. But he was in that program. And that's now what he does is early threat detection. So reading body language and things like that to try and de-escalate situations before they reach that point of critical mass, if you will. But if you read into those kinds of things and you invest your mind and your time and your energy into those kinds of topics and that kind of information, you are going to put yourself ahead of the power curve. 110%, 11 out of 10 times, you're going to be better off than the guy standing next to you if you know what to look for in a dangerous situation. And that's when we get into pieces of what Joe was talking about with counterterrorism versus anti-terrorism. You know, counterterrorism being, you know, the efforts, if I'm getting this correctly, and you guys let me know if I got this backwards, but counterterrorism being the efforts to counter what they might do, and anti-terrorism being the steps to prevent. So in simplest terms, anyways. So moving forward with this, aside from just monitoring your environment, if you were somebody who's a bystander and this happened, let's say you did have a firearm on you, could you dispatch rounds onto this individual? Yeah. If there, at least as it's defined here in Michigan, and this is not to say you guys aren't going to, don't take this as legal advice. Do not take this as legal advice. I'm not an attorney and I'm not telling you what to do. We're talking about a hypothetical here. To be very clear to anybody listening, this is a hypothetical. If you were standing there on Bourbon Street when that happened, and let's say you were just walking through, you hadn't been drinking, you have a firearm on you. I believe they're somewhat lax, or at least decent carry laws in the state of Louisiana and the city of New Orleans proper, right? Could you draw your firearm and put rounds on this asshole? Yes. Now, I can only tell you what Michigan law says. Michigan law is, you know, to prevent and preserve life, preserve life and prevent grievous bodily harm to somebody. So whether that's you, your family, or a bystander on the streets who you have no idea who they are, that's included, which yes, terrorist attack, asshole opening firearm on a crowd, you know, yes, you could do that, which brings us to the next point in all of this. Like, concealed carry is a great, great, great tool in any kind of preservation and prevention measures if you're actively concerned with something like a terrorist attack. And people go, yeah, I mean, obviously I carry for self-defense. And yes, however, what I'm talking about is outside the scope of self-defense. And here's how I look at it, okay? Because when we talk about guys that carry for self-defense, I'm not talking about those of us out there that are super dedicated and they're very invested and they're really into it, right? So I'm not talking about those of us that carry a Glock 19 with an X300 and a red dot and you carry an extra mag and, you know, when you get out to the range, you run duty belts and plate carriers and you got EOTech's name points and cans and all the good stuff because you're learning tactics and precision and performance-based shooting, right? No, what I'm talking about, which does exist as a segment of our community, and we have to be cognizant of this, right? are the people that carry for self-defense. I'm using air quotes right now. You guys can't see it. So they carry for self-defense. These are the people that carry 5-shot, 38 revolvers. Because that's all you're going to need, right? You need 5 shots. And if you need more than that, you deserve to die. I've been told that before. Excuse me. So, which I don't agree with, just to be fucking clear, I think that's a terrible way to look at your own self-defense and preservation of your life and your family's life. But, you know, and those people exist. They carry in the pocket holsters, which is like basically just a nylon sleeve that the gun goes into so that nothing in your pants pocket could possibly get in that trigger guard and you know, discharge the firearm, which I don't agree with. I think they're terrible, but you know, there's a lot of people that love them. Or you can be those people that you carry a Glock 43 with 7 rounds in it, or what is the fucking M&P they just came out? The Bodyguard 380, or the Ruger LCP in 380, or any of these little pocket pistols these old people carry, or even guys will ankle carry because it's the most convenient, it's the most comfortable. If you are somebody who's doing that as a concealed carrier in the application of a counterterrorism action, right? So you're drawing and deploying your firearm in the effort of counterterrorism, right? You see a terrorist, he's committing an attack, you are doing your part to try and dispatch this asshole to the afterlife. That is not... those people, concealed carry folks, are different than those of us, I think, who are prepared and concerned for counterterrorism or just terrorism in general. And it's a slightly different conversation. And I think, you know, maybe some people blend this together. Oh, it's really just, you know, the people that carry the right way, or maybe it's the people that know what's up, or the ones that aren't the FUDs. So what I think of, if you're concerned with potential mass violence attacks, terrorism, things like that, then you're carrying with, at minimum, you're carrying something like a Glock 43X, you're carrying a 365 or a 365 XL or macro, right? Or a Glock 19 or a P320 or an M&P 2.0 compact, right? Something that's 9mm with a full-size frame, or I guess technically it's a compact frame, but something at least 15 rounds plus one in the tube, and you're carrying an extra mag with you. So technically, if you have 15 in the gun and a spare mag, that's 30 plus one in the pipe, that is 31 rounds of 9mm. At that point, I would consider you to be immediately better prepared for that situation than somebody who pulls a 5-shot revolver out, doesn't have a reload ready to go, doesn't have shit cooking, and they got 5 shots. So at best, I'm thinking you're putting 2 rounds on one guy. You if there's more than one person, you're completely screwed. And if you miss, like, just fucking forget it, dude. Like, follow-up shots, recoil control. Typically, those people are not very well qualified, I'll say. And I mean that in terms of they don't go to the fucking range and qual themselves. Not saying that you have to be qualed, you don't have to do it through an agency. Like, you can qualify yourself. Hey, what's a good standards drill or set of drills that I like? Cool. Like, we just went out last month and we did the GBRS standards. There's like 7 of them, and there's very attainable time hacks. And I think I missed one due to how I'm gonna throw John under the bus a little bit and say it was because he didn't give me the ready standby on the timer, which I think is a legit bitch. But you know, I failed it. I didn't like sit there and gripe for a redo. Josh passed all of them. I think John blew one, like, not by much, but you know, whatever. That's what you do standards for, and that's why you train. That's why you practice. The people that are carrying these, you know, I'll go back to the revolvers, these little pocket 380s and stuff. Typically, they're not going to the range and practicing draws. They're not practicing reloads. In a lot of cases, they think that just having the gun on them is enough. So we're talking about this. The kinds of people who are really seriously concerned about this, they're carrying, like I said, a compact to full-size pistol. You're talking 15 or 17 rounds at minimum. And then typically there's some sort of medical also carried there. Now, is it a ton of medical? I think not. Typically, when we look at individual kits that can be carried on the body easily, like the Live the Creed kit or the T-Rex arms kit that is basically the same thing that just came out a couple months back, right? That is a kit that I wouldn't call it a blowout kit. I would call it an individual first aid kit, very much a IFAC, because it has enough supplies to render aid to a single casualty in most instances. So then, are you only carrying that? Maybe you got like a snake staff Systems EDC tourniquet in your coin pocket on your jeans or something, or in your back pocket. Okay, cool. Or do you have something more robust than that? A lot of people have sling bags now that have soft armor panels in them, which is another piece of the pie that we can talk about too. And in that bag, then you can have even more ammunition, and you can have even more medical. So now you take yourself from being a single person who's actually with only five rounds being more of a liability than anything, because you're probably not well-trained. You're probably going to miss, which means you might even shoot somebody and add to the fucking problems, both legally and literally. And you turn yourself into an actual asset in the situation. So whether you're the one who's putting some hate on this asshole and putting him down, or it's the police that do it, hey, I have a bag. I have supplies with medical here. I can help. You are now a fucking asset. Asterisk. Because I know somebody was going to be like, ooh, that's not it. Yeah, I'm going to say it too, because it needs to be said. The supplies and the gear alone do not make you the asset. You have to have those gears, the gear and supplies, so the medical supply stuff, right? And you have to have the knowledge and the training to be effective with it. And it's a huge miss for a lot of people. Everybody carries a tourniquet because it's the hot, sexy thing to fucking do. Guys will, you know, I talked about this on a video for the Patreon. Guys will talk about they got the TRX Arms Sidecar 2.0, and I do too. I think it's a great design. I love that holster. I carry with it for my 43X, and I carry with it for my 19. And they take the extra mag off of it, and they'll put the tourniquet holder wing on there because you're way, and there's a couple people online. I'm not going to call names out or anything, but they want to come and chastise folks. What do you need a spare mag for? You're way more likely to encounter a situation where you need this tourniquet or some kind of medical. So it makes all the sense in the world that when you leave the house, you take your gun and it's got a tourniquet attached to it. Cool. Let me ask you, as a listener who probably shoots, I don't know, I would say once a month, I would hope, right? When you have a malfunction or an issue with your firearm, typically, your concealed carry piece, you know, or just a handgun in general, what is that issue usually? Because for me, I'll tell you, it's a double feed or a stove pipe or a failure to feed or something like that, i.e. ammunition and magazine related problems. So how do we fix that, right? I mean, your immediate action is tap, rack, bang, right? We all know that. But what's your remedial action? Your remedial action, if you've trained it, should be to strip that mag out, clear the malfunction, the jam, whatever it is, if you can. Sometimes you can't if it's catastrophic failure, right? Clear the malfunction and then reinsert the magazine, rack the slide, and go back to work, right? Now, is it easier to do that under pressure for time, for speed, whatever, because this is an urgent situation, right? Is it easier to do that while holding a mag in your hand, or is it easier to drop that mag, clear the malfunction, go to your backup ammo source, complete your reload, and go back to work? And then if you had to, you can pick up the magazine that you dropped. To me, I don't want to have to sit there and carry something else, hold something else, stow something in a pocket before I can start fixing the tool that's in my hand. So for me, I'm not saying you shouldn't carry a tourniquet. I'm saying that you should. I'm just saying it should not take the place of your reserve ammunition source, when even the great brands out there, you know, OEM Glock and Magpul mags, they fail. So that's how I look at it. And then if you want even more, like, I will take a Vertex sling bag with me, and in it I'll have an additional two mags. So if I'm carrying my 43X, I throw two 10 round OEMs in there, you know. Or if I'm carrying the 19, I'll put two 17 rounders in there, two full size mags. So either way, you have anywhere from 20 to 34 additional rounds and two additional magazines. So even if your backup fails, the magazine that is, you know, base plate pops off, or the followers just fucked, or the spring or something, whatever, right? You have options. So that to me is where you start to see yourself be more accountable, is when you have supplies like that, which make you an immediately more valuable asset to the situation than just somebody who shows up with a gun. Now, when we look at a couple other concepts, things like a truck gun, I've advocated against a truck gun in a lot of instances. I think a lot of guys do it because they just want an excuse to have a short-barreled gun in their fucking vehicle. That's what it is. And they want to be able to pull it out and show their friends, this is my truck gun. You know, like, cool. Now, I will say it is not a fucking bad idea if you train with it and if it makes sense for you to have it in your vehicle. Now, we can use hindsight here to pick this shit apart, and that's why hindsight is 50-50. That's why, you know, you can armchair quarterback it, Monday morning quarterback these incidences, you know, up, down, and the other way. In this incident in New Orleans, it was a lone wolf attacker. Yes, he was trying to be affiliated with a terrorist organization, so we do know it was terrorist, but it was one guy. Once he's dead, yes, the IED issue remains. That's not something you or I are going to... We're not fixing that shit. We're fucking not, okay? There's only so much you can do as a prepared citizen, and I think that disarming and defusing explosive devices is off the list, you know? And I hate to reference Hollywood, but, like, look at, how was it, like, Lethal Weapon 3, I think. The movie starts with them trying to defuse a bomb and blowing up a whole building because they fuck it all up. And that's, you know, the Hollywood of it is they barely make it out and then it blows up behind them. Real life, you're probably going up with it. So that's a little bit out of our scope. Now let's look at, because we can't ever just look at, and this is critical, when you guys are building preparedness plans for yourself, for your family, you have to look at more than one incident and more than one type of incident. You have to have a good, good sample sizes of data to evaluate when you're trying to be well-rounded and well-prepared, okay? So let's for a second back it up, you know, 10-ish years, a little bit less, to the Paris attack in 2015, which Joe also spoke about on the pod, where you had several gunmen, some of them with S vests or suicide vests, they had pipe bombs taped to their chest or whatever, attacked some very public venues, and they did it in a coordinated way that was going to draw resources to one part of the town while they attacked another, and it was going to create congestion and mass chaos. That's, you know, leveraging fear as a weapon, and then obviously killing people by shooting them. In that kind of a situation, and let's not mince the words here, guys, that could happen here. That could definitely happen here. A, people don't know how to fucking drive, and we all know it. It's fucking stupid. People don't know how to drive. Especially when bad shit happens. So, like, you guys see a car wreck on the side of the road, why do you think everyone stops and gawks? Because they want to see what's going on, and it creates a traffic delay, if not just a total gridlock and a stop. Which in one of these mass casualty situations, is bad, because then you have just have more targets of just complete, just sheep, basically, that are, I don't really know what, that's a terrible way to say it, but I don't know what other words used to describe these people and how they're behaving in that specific moment. Innocents, victims, right? So in that situation, would something like a truck gun help you? So you have multiple assailants armed. I believe in Paris they were with, they had AKs or some kind of rifle platform. And they maybe have body armor, and strapped to the body armor, they have bombs. So now you're talking about a whole different conversation here. Now, in this context, yes, having something like a truck gun makes sense. How would you do it? Well, I think there's arguments for a couple different things here. I would apply most of the, I'll say, core principles of rifle building that we observe with anything else. So if you're going to build it out and carry it with you for the explicit use and purpose of this kind of an event, A, understand that after it's all said and done, that might be commandeered and taken into evidence, and taken into evidence for a while. So you might not get that gun back. So things like anything NFA, like a suppressor, I think is typically, unless you don't care, I mean, it's up to you, typically probably a bad idea, because A, if your car ever got broken into for some reason, then you lose the NFA item, and it's a huge fucking headache with the ATF. Not that I think that that should be the deciding factor. I'm just giving you the information here, folks. But you could have something like a Surefire Warden, some kind of blast shield that's going to help blow debris and bullshit away from you when you're shooting. Yes, it probably should be something in a shorter barrel length, and maybe I would say an AR pistol with a folder or some kind of condensing sliding stock or something like that, where you can make it smaller and more compact because you're trying to fit it into a vehicle. So, you know, a 16 or 18 inch M4 platform rifle, maybe not the best choice. Something maybe I'd say probably 5.56 is your best bet, because if you do end up on the oddest of chances with somebody else around you who had the same idea, you can probably share magazines. When you get into weird calibers, guys are like, ooh, I'll do a 6 arc, or I'll even 300 blackout. Like, here's the thing, 300 blackout is great if you're shooting suppressed, which we just took out of the equation. We just said we're not doing that, unless you are. If you are, cool, rock on, run what you want. But I would say for most basic purposes and applications, 5.56, man. The magazines, they match the other M4 platforms that are around. It makes life a lot easier. And then you only have to stock one kind of magazine and one kind of ammo for your training, for your larger guns and everything, right? Obviously, you want to make sure you have a sling. To me, this is a great time to have a single point sling. Short gun, easy to manipulate. You're not doing all kinds of crazy ass shit with it. You're responding to a situation. I would say single point. You can do a double point if you want, but I always imagine having this little compact gun, because I don't, full disclosure, I don't run a truck gun. I work from home. I am a remote worker. I am not in my vehicle enough to where I can realistically justify the need and the cost of a truck gun. If that changes, then that may change for me in that regard as well. I might look into doing something differently. But I digress. You're also going to want some kind of sighting system. So a robust and manageable sighting system. EOTech, maybe. I don't want to say an aim point. I don't want to like throw out all these big name optics and stuff. I want you to have something that's, you know, reliable and durable, obviously. But again, if this gets, you know, confiscated, then you're out that money, and an $800 T2, that's a big, you know, kick to the knackers. And then, you know, I would say a white light. So maybe a hollow sun, maybe a lead and steel, LP1 or something. It's just a little bit more affordable, versus some of the more expensive optics on things you don't need. You don't need a fucking laser on it. I don't care what anybody on the internet tells you. If they try to tell you that they are responding to an active killer event with nods and a laser, they're a fucking liar. Unless it's happening close to their home and they grab the rifle out of their house. Nobody should be leaving that shit on a truck gun. It's just unnecessary. If it's dark out, I don't know that I would leave my night vision out in the car. It's just unlikely. But you need to have a white light. And now you're talking about taking this platform, maybe it's a 5.56, 10.5-inch gun, right? Now you can be way, way more effective, because look at some of the common problems that our law enforcement face in this country, right? A lot of them, I just talked to somebody who left policing last night. One of the things that they griped about is that their superintendent or commissioner or whoever, no external vests, no hard armor anymore, soft vests only. Cool. Well, if you're terrorists, individuals are also wearing soft armor because it's more concealable, right? They want to conceal themselves before they get into their target where they start, you know, acting a fool. Then they have those same problems, which means pistol rounds are going to hurt like a motherfucker, but they're not going to penetrate. Rifle rounds will. So having something like a truck gun here makes this, you know, a lot different of a conversation, and you are immediately more effective. Again, I'll have the same point made here that I talk about with the medical that we were just discussing. If you don't have the training, you're not actually an asset to what's going on. You're just a liability, because think about this. If you have 3 terrorists with AKs in a large venue, think of your local shopping mall or movie theater or stadium. You know, here we got Ford Field where the Lions play. You have tens of thousands of people potentially running around, screaming, trying to get the hell out of the fucking way. And you have 3 people that are looking to do as much damage as they possibly fucking can. So you need to be able to accurately and proficiently employ that tool. So that means that, yes, you need to be able to shoot. And you need to be able to shoot past 10, 15 yards. Some of the stuff that I've seen on the range, some people, and this is true of both rifle and handgun skills, you should be able to pretty easily, as long as your rifle's zeroed, and guys, fucking zero your, like, no matter what anybody says, I don't care how close your one optic was when it came out of the box one time, no optic comes zeroed from the factory. It's not a fucking thing. You could get the most primo rifle with the best optic in the world, whatever it is, right? And you're still going to have to go zero and confirm zero on that shit. Now, zero your rifle and or handgun, because if it's got a red dot and irons, right, like that stuff all has to be zeroed and confirmed anyways, you have to be able to make that shot. We've done relay drills and stuff. Guys struggled at 50 yards to hit A-zone steel, and that's with nobody running in front of it. That's under minimal stress and pressure. Guys also struggled when we were out at the range to hit an 8-inch gong with a handgun at 25 yards. Now, typically, if you didn't have to, would you take a 50-yard shot? I don't know. In that situation, if you had a clear shot for somebody who's taking out dozens of civilians, innocents, do you take that shot? I would like to think if you were in that situation in that moment to do it, then yeah, you would. But how would you feel if you missed and hit a little kid because you were too busy doing other things to work on your zero? And this is why I advocate for guys actually not to carry truck guns, because if you don't train with a rifle, if you own 7 handguns because that's your thing and you like it, you don't go to the range, you don't train, and then you buy a rifle and keep it in your truck because you want to be Billy Badass, who's going to be the next guy who makes the news cycle because you saved the world, and then it doesn't go that way because you were too proud to train and too stupid to know that you weren't reliable, and you went from asset to liability in the pull of a trigger. This shit is fucking real. So when you're talking about that kind of stuff, having a truck gun, responding to these incidents, you have to have the associating skills to be effective in that regard and in that role. And guys, more often than not, we talk about avoiding these situations as being the best method. And that still holds true today. If you're with your family out in public, I implore any of you, get your family to safety. Now, yes, if you have the training and you're in law enforcement, former military, or just a civilian that can shoot well and you're capable and able and you want to try to be of service to help protect and protect life and prevent loss of life, then yes, that you should do those things. But to have the fantasy that I think some people do about this kind of thing is... it's just that. It's a fantasy. It's not going to be that way. Now, if you're caught in the middle of it, then it's game on, and you have decisions to make, and you have to be real about it. Now, yes, we've been fortunate in this country in that most of the attacks that, at least that I'm aware of, these things are carried out by a lone wolf individual. So, yes, you might have to deal with a multifaceted issue. So, yes, vehicle, IED, gunfire. But it's one individual. So once you take out, I'll use the terminology and the phrases that Joe did, once you eliminate the initiator, i.e. the human that has the controls to the bombs and obviously the control of the trigger of whatever firearm he's using, then that issue is then, at least for that moment, put to rest, to borrow a phrase there. And okay, fine. You look at what happened in Paris with multiple people and what happens around the world, right? With these terrorist attacks with multiple people and coordinated efforts like this across large venues, it is an entirely different conversation as to what we're dealing with. And it starts to highlight the importance of having some of the gear, some of the knowledge that we, I think, in this community here in the United States, for all the freedom that we have and all the opportunity that we have to share information, to learn this information, to practice these skill sets and develop these skill sets and make ourselves more dangerous people, we have an equal number of voices both inside and outside our community telling us, you don't need to learn that. And it's like, what are you fucking talking about? And you see this shit on the news, like, you don't need to learn CQB. Why not? I just saw whatever on the news, these terrorists, and they were in a shopping mall. They were in this building. They were in, you know, whatever structure. And you have guys who are gatekeeping the knowledge to preserve whatever they did in, you know, the earlier years of their life to tell you don't need it. Or you should only learn one man CQB because that's what you're going to end up doing. And it's like, how the fuck do you know? I will always advocate for people to learn more and to understand. Because here's the thing. If you can understand four-man CQB, you can take the time and then it's way easier to learn two-man CQB. And then it's way easier to learn one-man. Now, do you have a lot more responsibilities with the less bodies that you have? Fuck yeah, you do. And it gets exponentially worse with each reduction in force or reduction in manpower. But you should still have access to it, just like you should still have access to the information around high-performing shooting standards. It's funny, we look at people that are out there on the internet telling us that we should learn to shoot like a competitive shooter so that we can take that performance on demand component and apply it to self-defense shooting to maximize our efficacy and protect life. However, and there was a great post, I think, that Garrett from RAS Group, Garrett put up the other day. It was a picture of a hallway. And talking about guys want to learn CQB because it looks cool, but people can't make a 25-yard, you know, reduced A-zone pistol shot or rifle shot under pressure, under time, because it's not sexy and they don't work on it. And he's right. He's 100% right. the answer is not either one of those two things, which we get caught up in very often here. The answer is both. The answer is there has to be a good balance. You have to be able to get to the problem, and then you have to be able to solve the problem. And being able to solve the problem without being able to get to it is also equally as dumb. And those are just two examples. It's just as important to sit here and say, if you get to the problem and you can't solve it, but the problem is not that you need to shoot somebody, maybe they're already been shot, there's somebody bleeding out, and you have medical supplies, but you don't have the adequate knowledge to know how to employ them. Because somebody on the internet said, hey, just carry med, more than likely there'll be somebody there who has the knowledge and can help. But what if there isn't? Thinking about school shooters, thinking about any of these incidences, these mass casualty incidences where there's hardly ever enough first responder personnel to go around to address the casualty count, wouldn't one more help? Wouldn't you feel better about what you were able to do that day? I mean, and what you feel is almost, it's almost not even a part of the equation, but knowing that you could potentially save a life, which is the whole fucking point here, isn't that better? Because you took the time to learn medical, so that that one person IFAC that you carry around in your back pocket that has, you know, like a SWAT tee and gloves and some, you know, what do you fucking call it? The hemostatic gauze and stuff in it and everything, like that little bit that you have with your EDC tourniquet from Snake Staff Systems, that you could save a life with that, even just one life. That family doesn't have to lose a loved one, whether it's a man, woman, child, whatever the fuck, it doesn't matter. That's what we're talking about when we have these conversations, guys. And it's when we have to be our own first responder. And I get it. That fucking phrase is repeated so much over and over. It is, in my opinion, the concept be your own first responder is so commercialized and, in my opinion, misused and misrepresented by so many brands out there. They're just trying to sell you shit you don't need. It's right up there with, you know, sheep and sheepdog, you know, hashtag sheepdog. I'm out there to protect the people who can't fight for themselves. And it's like, yeah, you're kind of like that guy. I was listening to another episode where I said this, the guys the stupid fucking meme video on the internet, they take their shirts off and they each got the Monster logo tattooed on their arm. And like, I'd sure hate to fuck with us. You think? And it's like, yeah, dude, you guys are retards. Absolutely idiots. But I digress. So investing yourselves in the proper skills, the proper training, it doesn't always have to be physical and aggression based training. So guys are like, oh, you're going to die if you don't know jiu-jitsu. Oh, you're going to die if you don't, you know, practice your concealed carry draw. Oh, you're going to die. And it's like, it becomes this stupid fucking marketing scheme that, and I talked about it when I had Jared on and he pointed out pretty clearly. And it's something I 100% agree with. People use that as a marketing scheme. If you don't have the one thing that only I can teach you, you will die. And they use fear as a tactic, which, you know who else uses fear as a tactic? Terrorists. Now, I know that's not the same fucking thing. Everybody calm the fuck down. But what I am saying is that you are responsible for what you want to learn. And don't let somebody else on the internet tell you what's important and what isn't. And 110%, by the way, that counts for the guy you're listening to right now. Don't let what I'm saying here be the reason that you go out and get training. Now, I hope this conversation spurs some kind of inspirational action where you go, you know what? I need to fucking learn more. I need to be able to do more. I want to be more capable. Or your wife does, you know? I mean, that's a missed opportunity right there. When are we always out in public together? And your wife, you know, let me back this up because I'm getting ahead of myself. There's so many guys out there that want to bring their wives, their spouses, their significant others, or it could be a woman, it could be reversed, right? Maybe, you know, you want to get your spouse or significant other involved in what you're doing here. You love training. You love building your own accountability and capability. That's your passion. That's what you want to do for yourself and with yourself. Now, your partner disagrees. At least fundamentally on the point of they don't want to carry a firearm. They don't want to shoot somebody. They're against it. But they're willing to learn medical. They're willing to learn emergency communications with radios and things like that. Those are, that's a great opportunity. When we look at a lot of these mass violence attacks, these terrorist attacks, there is, like I said a moment ago, there's almost never enough immediate medical attention available, and supplies are usually in short order. They depict it in TV shows, they depict it in movies, and you literally actually see it in the news and stuff all the time. So having somebody with training and access to supplies, that's an instant win right there, and they don't have to carry a gun. They don't have to be offensive in or aggressive in nature. It can serve both means. That's not to say that you can't also learn that. Maybe that's a way for some of you guys to get greater access to this training and information instead of going to your wife and saying, hey, terrorists could attack at any fucking time. We need to do this. You could say, hey, we've been talking about doing this. I'd like for us to sign up and take this class together. We'll do it together. We'll go learn this basic trauma medicine, and then we'll be safer together. It will be safer if something happens with us with the kids. You know, I mean, and why not, right? Couples do it all the time. I took a cooking class for the first time. Like, I'm not a good cook. I really am not. I was very out of my element. I was super uncomfortable. Did it last year for my anniversary with my wife. She loved it. I loved it too. The empanadas we made were fucking awesome. But why not? I mean, couples do that all the time. So why not do that to make your household better prepared for when you're, yes, in the household, but also out in the world where you have to go to get things like groceries or clothes or, you know, fill in the blank. This threat of terrorism is not, it's not going away. You know, we've been dealing with this for 40 years, and that's longer than most of us have been alive. And we've been dealing with it longer than that. If you start reading into books on stuff, this isn't a new concept. We've switched to our allies a couple times, or switched and then switched back. But this isn't new, guys. It's not going away anytime soon. These people aren't just going to, you know, have their last generation die off and just forget the whole thing. You know, Bin Laden's kid is the one behind a lot of this, for God's sake. Hey, the United States, the country that came in and schwacked his old man. Yup. He's probably not going to be super fucking happy about it. And Joe outlined that in the discussion. So that's why we're seeing these more violent attacks. Like, yes, we saw 9/11 on American soil, and that was the big one, right? There were other bombing attempts across the country and other things. And yeah, right. You can get into all of it. Saw 9/11, and now we're not seeing that yet, but that could happen. Think about that. Put that into perspective for yourself. If the next 9/11 were to happen tomorrow, next month, whatever have you, are you in a position where you could be capable and reliable enough to be effective? To make it through that day in a way that you're going to look back on it and be happy with how you performed as a capable individual. Because I think for a lot of people, the answer is yes, but the real answer is probably no, because we just over-prioritize the wrong things. And guys, I'm just as guilty. Seriously, I am. I have it on my list this year. I need to get into medical training. I did, you know, 2 comms classes over the last 13 months, I think, which I haven't really dug into. Lindsay, don't be mad at me. I'm sorry. Josh brought that up the other day. You should be our comms guy. I'm like, I am not. I don't need any part of that. I'm not that guy. Medical is important, and at least baseline medical. So the same shit they teach to the people that go through the military through boot camp, baseline medical is drastically far and beyond better than no knowledge at all. It really is. And it's not that much. It really isn't. But it's something, and it's enough to cover basic trauma to where you can get that individual to medical assistance. So a doctor or an EMT or a nurse or somebody who knows more, who might either be on site, or you can get them to a hospital, something like that. The concept of being your own first responder and being accountable is absolutely what you should be chasing. I can't say enough that the tagline of, you know, hashtag be your own first responder, I hate how commercialized it's been, but it's true, so you can't be super mad at it, right? I think that being vigilant when you leave the house is a big part of it, and here's a huge thing, guys, and I know I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to get a little bit of flack for it. I might get a little bit of heat for it. I don't really give a shit, because we're starting to talk about people's lives, really. If you fucking see something, say something. I think we've gotten to a point in this nation where we've legislated ourselves into what I was talking about earlier, with just tons of soft targets all over the place, because the answer has always been, for the last 20 years, the gun is the problem. It's a gun-free zone. Well, what's the second part of this attack we just witnessed in New Orleans? And I would seriously bring that up to people when they bring this up, is hey, well, if it wasn't a gun-free zone, somebody could have shot back sooner. And you get the people that don't want to hear reason, and those people that have their heads buried in the sand, you'll never be able to do anything with it. But we've become a nation of soft targets and soft individuals. We really, really fucking have. It's not impossible to see something on a larger scale happen here. It really isn't. We're at the point now where we are so soft. We are so concerned with getting canceled, having someone look at us and call us a fucking racist, or tell us that we're, anti-Semitic, or we hate, fill in the blank people, right? Because you looked at somebody and said something about that doesn't pass the sniff test. And yeah, I mean, you could be wrong, and you can apologize, and they'll call you all the names in the world. And you know what? If you know in your heart that you had those concerns for the right reasons and not just a color of skin, or because they had a longer beard, or because they appeared, outwardly appear Muslim or whatever, then that's fine. I think that any of us would be able to live with that. Hey, they think I'm an asshole and a racist. I'm not, but this is why I felt the way I did. Okay, fine. Move on. But we've become so concerned with that, and we now culturally defend that shit to the point where we have a country that's flooded with legal immigrants, flooded with terrorists, flooded with criminals that are perpetrating terrible fucking crimes on United States citizens, and we have our own countrymen who are standing up and screaming for these people to have better treatment. It's absolutely insane. So to a degree almost, you're actually starting to talk about operating behind enemy lines. I don't want to get fucking tinfoil and weird about it, so that's all I'm going to say with it. But like, think about the actual situation we're in, and depending on what state you live in, it may be worse than some of the others, right? Where you have these politicians, at least right now, because I know we're getting ready to change over a bunch of seats in the House, the Senate, and yes, of course, the presidency. But think about it, where you had these people released and they committed a crime. They weren't held. They were turned back out in the streets, and they turn around and they rape a 14-year-old girl, or they murder a child, or fill in the blank on whatever disgusting, heinous crime. But because they are a certain ethnicity, certain nationality, they get a pass from the woke police, and you do not, because you're a white suburbanite, or you have white privilege, or whatever. I mean, I keep saying white, but it could be anything. They're using prejudice as a word to try and make you feel bad for seeing something that doesn't look right and saying something. Think about if see something, say something in concept, right, was applied to everything that led to 9/11. Hey, and we didn't say anything about some Middle Eastern gentlemen that were somewhat standoffish and went and took, pilot lessons, but never cared about learning how to land. Like, if somebody had said something, I would hope that, and you can only do what you can do. I'm not under any illusion that we're going to fix this whole thing, just with a wave of better prepared, better informed civilians, because ultimately it's got to be passed on to the right authorities and people who can act on this stuff and people who can do better with it, right? And you have to trust that agencies and entities like the FBI and things are going to do their job. And a lot of times they don't. I understand. It's after every one of these fucking attacks. Not everyone, but a lot of them, right? That comes out and says, hey, we had this person on a list. We've been aware of this individual for some time now, unfortunately. And it's like, well, what the fuck were you waiting for? And I understand there's got to be a legal process behind it that makes sense, that no one said it was going to be easy, because then you get into, why don't we act sooner? And everyone's fucking great idea was red flag laws, which those suck too. So I'm not saying this is easy. I'm just saying that in the moment, ideally, we have enough people who are who are personally accountable for their own safety and the safety of their communities, that I think ideally in those moments, you can help minimize any damage or loss of life, because you can draw down on one of these people and you can put an end to their evil and their violence before it's able to be carried out. That's best case scenario, obviously. Is it realistic? I don't know. I don't fucking know. I think that's all of our hope, is that you see somebody get out of a vehicle, they start to raise a weapon, and you're able to, I think maybe all of us have probably at some point had that daydream where you're able to draw down on somebody and stop that threat before they hurt anyone. And it's a little bit Hollywood, I think. But the world's a cruel place, man. And to think that way, I think you hold on to that. I think you hold on to that idea for the hope that you can be effective when the time comes. But I really don't know. So self-reliance and first response, you guys, like, that's it's super important, especially as we continue to work through these issues like defunding the police and gun-free zones and all this other stuff. This world that we've built for ourselves, we made this bed. Now we got to lie in it, unfortunately. And what's the way out? How do we survive this thing? How do we make it out to the other end? I think we talked about a lot of it here that can ultimately help. I know a lot of us are probably already working on several of those things, but maybe this is a good dialogue for some of you guys on what next steps you can take, what you carry with you. Maybe when you go to work, you pack out your backpack a little bit more. Maybe you don't just put your laptop and your lunch in there. Maybe you get, you go to some place like a MyMedic or something, and you get like a 2 or 4 person blowout kit, and you just keep that shoved in your backpack, and you have it there, and you dedicate the time and the money to getting medical training from some of these companies like, Josh, Nomadic Clinician with Orion Training Group, or Dark Angel Medical, or whomever, right? But it starts with proactive, with active action. You got to go out and seek out the instruction. You got to be willing to take the time to invest in yourself and learn so that you can be more effective and be more capable as an American citizen, as it is your right. And that's, you want to protect your home, protect your community, your neighbors, right? Your family, or just even the stranger standing next to you on the street. It's a decision. And I know that feels like an oversimplification, but it's a decision that you can make. I am going to be better. I'm going to be more capable. I'm going to be more prepared, whatever the case may be. So hopefully this all makes sense to you guys. I feel like I've been rambling and I try to let this just flow because it's something that I have a lot of different thoughts about, it's something that I think we keep in the back of our minds, right? And we never want to think that it could happen to us until it, obviously then it could, right? Look at New Orleans is a great example. And of all times, right, it's one of those moments where everyone's there to have a good time, and it should never, ever be tainted by this shit, but that's the world. It's the world we live in. So thank you guys. I appreciate you hanging out and listening to me. If you guys are looking for additional ways to support us, you can check out our Patreon. We have a Spreadshirt shop. Head on over to Instagram. You can get into our link tree, get to the Spreadshirt, pick up a shirt, hat, apron, tote bag, whatever you want. All kinds of good stuff on there that comes back to help support the Prepared Mindset. Also, we're really kicking the YouTube into overdrive this year. If you guys listen to the ad space, talking about the GPR series we're working on with American Defense Manufacturing, sending us out some parts and upper and things like that. Check out the YouTube channel, man. Hit subscribe. We made huge strides we broke 1,000, I think just a day or two into 2025. We just missed our goal narrowly, but really, really grateful for the support, you guys. And we hope that you are getting great value out of this content. And there's more to come, folks. 2025 is going to be a big year. Thank you guys so much once more for hanging out and listening. That's all I got for you this week. Until next time, everybody, stay safe out there, stay warm, and like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.